Wendell Potter is back on the show with me today. Wendell Potter is a former health insurance executive who several years ago wrote a book called Deadly Spin about what the insurance industry has done to contort the judicial system in this country and the legal system in this country to change the perception of big pharma and big insurance so that they look better. He should know something about that because he was involved in presenting that image to the country. He wrote about it in a book called Deadly Spin, and since then he's been campaigning for things like campaign finance reform, which he writes about in his new book, which is called Nation on the Take, How Big Money Corrupts Our Democracy and What We Can Do About It, a book that he has co-written with Nick Penniman. Wendell, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. Glad to be back.
A pleasure to have you back on here. Let's start with a simple question. How much money is spent on American elections?
It's just almost actually, there is no way to answer that because some of the money that's being spent to influence elections is never accounted for. We're talking many billions of dollars. Probably $10 billion will be spent in this election cycle, 2016 alone, which is far more than it was 4 years ago, and you know, obviously far, far more than we've ever spent or has been spent on any elections in any country at any time. It's just astonishing how much money is now being spent.
$10 billion.
Yes, yes.
And,
yeah, with a B.
And we wonder why we, the American people, don't get much of a voice in who ends up in the White House and in the state houses around this country.
Well, that's right, and that's why Nick and I wrote this book. There's a good reason why people are fed up with government and with the gridlock that pretty much defines Washington. And not just Washington, but corruption at the state and municipal levels as well, too, which we write about in the book. We wrote the book to connect the dots, not just to tell people how much money is being spent, but what consequences of all that money, what the consequences are for those of us who don't have that kind of money to spend, how we are affected in our daily lives. And there's we can't escape the effect of big money in politics, and it affects us all very adversely in many different ways.
One of the interesting things, and by the way, I just read a great excerpt from your book on Salon, and in there was something I didn't even think about, which is the effect it has on the time our legislators can spend actually doing their jobs, which is reduced considerably by the fact that they have to spend so much time raising money every single day, right?
That's right, and that's a fairly recent phenomenon in recent years. I was a reporter in Washington. I first came to Washington in 1976. It was a long time ago. The world was very different. The buildings there looked the same as they do now, but almost everything else has changed. Now, very much unlike it was when I was a reporter, members of the House spend about half of their time every single day, not in their offices, not on the floor of the House, but in a building not too far away, in a cubicle, dialing for dollars. And they're not calling you and me. They're calling people who are wealthy, who have the means to write big checks for them.
These are call centers.
They're call centers, and they are in the offices of the Democratic and Republican congressional campaign committees. And they've set up these cubicles where members of Congress go. They have stacks of cards in front of them of people to call that their aides have put together for them, and that's what they do. They just call, just like a telemarketer, call and call and call. It's to the point that many of them are just completely disgusted with what has happened to what a member of Congress now has to do with his or her time.
You write about how some freshman members of Congress are shocked that before they are even sworn into office, when they first get to Washington and they haven't even decided on the furniture that's going to be in their new office, and yet they're dragged over to these call centers, start raising money.
That's right. That's exactly right. They're given memos with directions or suggestions about how they spend their time each day. And it's just astonishing to newly elected members of Congress, and I think it certainly would be to the people who vote for them, how little time that they have to spend on the people's business.
Do you think it's true that Congress can't possibly fix a system that they benefit from?
I think it is possible that Congress can. It will take pressure from the American public to do that. I think that it can be done. And as we point out in the book, there are some pretty easy legislative fixes that will really make huge differences in the way we finance our political system. We spend more time, more money is now spent lobbying Congress than it costs taxpayers to run Congress. It's gotten that bad. But yes, it really can be fixed. And I think that enough members of Congress are disgusted with the way things are now that if there is a movement, and the last chapter in our book is The Makings of an All-American Movement, if there is pressure on people we vote for to address this, then it can be done.
Yeah, but you've got a huge percentage of people who know that once they get into Congress, they now have a gigantic lead in the next election because it's such a huge home field advantage to be an incumbent because that's when the money flows in.
Exactly right. And the special interests know this. And they once someone's in Congress, that's when the money starts really flowing into them to keep them in Congress if the special interests can count on them to vote the way they want to. And they typically can. When you're writing big checks to someone who you want to vote your way, that member of Congress likely will when it's needed.
So how do we change that in the era of Citizens United, where we're told by our Supreme Court that money equals speech? What kind of law could you pass, or what kind of system could you set up that takes that money out of there and squelches that so-called speech?
Well, and as I said earlier, it's not just at the federal level, it's all levels of government. And we're beginning to see this happening in cities and states across the country. In Seattle, for example, just this last November, the voters there voted for a measure that will reform campaign finance for city elections there. They did the same thing with something similar in Tallahassee, Florida, a few years ago. The state of Maine voters there passed a clean elections bill. So we're seeing the movement start, and it needs to start at the local and state level and build up to Washington. Washington will be the hardest nut to crack, there's no doubt about it, but it absolutely can be done.
When you say a clean election, you mean it's publicly financed?
Partly publicly financed. We refer to this as citizen-funded or citizen-financed campaigns because there are ways, like in New York City, in which a small donor has the ability to see his or her campaign contribution matched. By public funds in a way that gives that person more leverage. It levels the playing field. It enables a person who doesn't have a lot of money to see his or her campaign donation matched. And that can offset, and it has, we're seeing the evidence in New York in particular, of how that does offset the power of the special interest.
Would that also prevent really rich people, like the billionaire who's running for president this year, or the billionaires who have run for mayor and governor, et cetera, in other places? Would they be limited in the amount of their own personal money that they could spend?
There should be, and there can be limits on that. And that's something that probably would need to be addressed in the courts because of the Citizens United ruling. Money is considered speech in that twisted Supreme Court ruling. That too, by the way, can be changed either through a constitutional amendment. That's a long, arduous path. But other court cases could come before the court, and if the composition of the court changes with just one judge, then Citizens United itself can be changed. So we're talking about things that really can be done, and that's obviously a judicial fix, but things can be done legislatively as well, too.
Do those places that have made changes in campaign financing, as a result, have they seen more competitive races?
They are seeing more competitive races. They absolutely are, and the people who are elected are say consistently that they prefer the system. They don't have to spend so much time dialing for dollars and begging for campaign contributions. It frees them up to do more of the work that they wanted to do by running in the first place. So yes, citizens are happier. They like the system, and the people who are elected, who run for elective office, are much happier in that kind of a system as well, too.
I'm glad that you mentioned the effect of money on state and local races. Here in the St. Louis area, we've got a billionaire who is funding with something like $2 million out of his own pocket an effort to repeal the St. Louis City earnings tax. He's also entirely funding one woman who is a congresswoman who's up for re-election. And when you have that sort of thing, it's very, very difficult for any group or any voice to be heard beyond that, isn't it?
Exactly. When you've got, and that is the way the system is right now, and why the system so urgent has to be, why there's an urgent need to change the system. You've got when one single person, as you've indicated, who can spend so much money and not even miss it, to elect someone that he favors for Congress and to get legislation overturned that he doesn't like, or a tax he doesn't like overturned, then obviously something is wrong with the way that we are doing politics in this country. We've moved so far away from the vision that our founding fathers had for this country, in which there was the assumption that we had a system in place that could prohibit the kind of systemic corruption that we're seeing now at all levels of government.
Of the five remaining presidential candidates, two of them, Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump, both say that they're not taking super PAC money. Hillary Clinton and John Kasich and Ted Cruz are, and of course all of Congress takes super PAC money. That money is supposedly not coordinated with the candidates' campaigns. They're supposed to be independent. Are they?
Right. No, they're not. I mean, it's really a sham. There might not be the person who is running the PAC having meetings every day with the person who's running a campaign, but you can rest assured that there's an awareness of what each is doing. So in that sense, there certainly is coordination. There's awareness of what the other, what each other is doing. So it's just a sham.
Who do you think is the number one person blocking campaign finance reform in Congress?
One person in particular is Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell, who has stated unequivocally that he is opposed to it. He certainly has benefited himself from large campaign contributions. But there are many members of Congress and many former members of Congress who are Republicans who are just as set up and are just as dedicated to changing things as Democrats are. In fact, I'm from Tennessee, and one of the former senators from Tennessee, Bill Brock, a Republican who I used to cover when I was a reporter in Washington, is a strong advocate of changing the way that things are, and is actually serving on the board of advisors for Issue One, which is an organization that my co-author Nick Penniman is head of.
And we should also point out that President Obama hasn't pushed much for campaign finance reform while in office.
No, it's a great disappointment. He's really missed an opportunity to really use the position of the presidency as a bully pulpit to to follow the lead, if you will, of Teddy Roosevelt, who many years ago probably is the single greatest champion of campaign finance reform that we've ever had. But he used the office of the presidency and when he was campaigning for president to draw focus on this and to get people really behind what he knew needed to be done. And it's a shame that so far Barack Obama has not done that.
Yeah. Well, in the century since Teddy Roosevelt, things have gotten a hundredfold worse. And and the amount of money that flows through, you know, we're supposed to have 435 elected representatives representing us in Congress. I don't think that applies to any of them. They are all representing big money from whichever side it comes in on. Wendell Potter is the co-author of a great new book called Nation on the Take, How Big Money Corrupts Our Democracy and What We Can Do About It, co-written with Nick Penniman, who runs that group called Issue One. Thanks so much for joining me here today, Wendell.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me back on.
I'm Paul Harris. This is the Big 550 KTRS.